welcome to Detox the World's Guided Rose Cleanse. You are listening to the Week 3 live Q&A call with Natalia Rose, recorded January 17th, 2012. Thank you for joining, and we wish you well on your journey.
All right, well, welcome back, everyone, and well done on being ready to, you know, get engaged with Week 3. So it's really, I mean, what a huge win to be this far. Hope you're all feeling that. I've noticed a lot of amazing testimonials on the site, on our virtual living room. So clearly, you guys are tapping into what this is all about, and it's definitely not an empty promise or hope in a jar. This is the real deal. And those of you who are experiencing it will shout it from the rooftops, have been shouting it from the rooftops. And those of you who are just, you know, getting into it or maybe haven't had all of their, you know, all the results that others of you have had, those you can look forward to. So those of you who haven't quite had the results yet, just hang in there. Remember, the body's triaging first, and it's going to go to work immediately and heal what's most necessary, and then it will get to the things that may be more important to you but might mean less to the body. Everything in turn will be addressed. So anyway, today I want to go a little bit more into this idea of questioning power, our theme for this week. And I just am hoping that you all can just stay with me, because it's kind of a doozy I want to get into today, but it's really also so fundamental, so central to everything we're doing. So I ask that you just trust this is going somewhere, and hang on for the ride, and then we'll get to the questions. So our theme this week is question power. And we explained a bit about what that means in the Week 3 write-up that was sent out on Sunday, and it can be found on the discussion board. But today I want to give you the real tools that will enable you to get yourselves out of your cages with their invisible iron gates. I want you to walk away from this call truly understanding the vast source of power that's available to you and how to access it. Now, there are great teachers out there who can help you, but I want to put the knowledge in your hands so you can help yourself as a primary measure and know how to direct your efforts. Today, we're going to go back to the concept we touched on in the first class, the fundamental concept behind everything we're doing here. This concept is that we are a part of a network of living energy. We receive information and vitality from being a part of this network, and we reduce our information and vitality when we cut ourselves off from it or receive poor reception from it. This network or field of living energy is central to our power as humans. Everything we're doing here in this cleanse and through long-term deep tissue cleansing strengthens our critical connection to this living field, making us stronger and more powerful at every level, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. So let's start by focusing on what may well be the most important term in health, the key to all healing, and central to this living matrix from the smallest organism to the whole. The word is coherence. Coherence is resonant frequency or harmony. Incoherence is the scrambling of coherence, harmony rendered inharmonious. Okay, harmony brings beauty, health, and strength to the body, just as it does to sound. You've heard harmonious music, think Beethoven, and you've heard a frazzled cacophony, think Led Zeppelin played backward. Your whole sensory network, cells and subatomics included, react to the huge difference. As I'm about to explain, the cacophony damages your physical makeup. Before the body even comes into form, there is an energetic blueprint that the physical follows, just like construction workers follow an architect's blueprint. This intelligent blueprint becomes our material form, and it stays with us throughout our life. It's how we keep regenerating our form, even as our cells die off. If the harmony of that intelligence is maintained around us in the living field, which is an intelligence field. We will continue to regenerate our intact physical structure per the original blueprint's details. As you know, the body you have today does not contain the same cells, tissues, and bone as it did 7 to 10 years ago. Your body recreates itself through the intelligent blueprint, which gets translated into physical form constantly. The information is in the field of living energy. Now, the untrained eye typically cannot see this field, but some of you who are sensitive have seen it, or at least caught glimpses of the light patterns around us. The advanced sciences are proving it exists. Modern science, which still harkens back to Newtonian and the Newtonian Descartes models, regardless of how limited those models have proven to be, is still where our culture gets most of its health and science information from, and where most research is still being done today, despite its limitations. We can certainly take those things of value that come from that time and perspective, but we'd be very foolish to keep trying to plug it in and apply it where it's clearly falling short of solving our current health puzzles. Some of you do not need proof of this living network. You feel, sense, or intuit it. It has a ring of truth that you recognize as right and real. Others of you do need concrete proof. You can read the research of Dr. Bruce Lipton, Dr. Rupert Sheldrake, Lynn McTaggart, and there are many others. But back to the body. If your life and environment give off a resonant frequency that is coherent and harmonious with your intelligent energy blueprint, your physical form will consistently restructure itself according to the direction of that blueprint. And you can even improve upon it because you can increase the harmony within and around you. Where the opposite is true, and incoherence warps the intelligent energy blueprint, you would become a less harmonious version of that blueprint, physically and mentally. It's like an energetic physical snowball effect. At this point, without the right knowledge of how to restore coherence, your physical integrity would become progressively worse off. Dissonance warps the energetic blueprint in direct relation to the extent at which you and your environment attune to the dissonance. Okay, let me repeat that. Dissonance warps the energetic blueprint in direct relation to the extent at which you and your environment attune to the dissonance. So the more dissonance around you that you attune to, the more your energetic blueprint will get warped. Okay, this can manifest within, inside the body, as organ, endocrine, metabolic, immune, bone, and other physical illnesses or symptoms, or on the outside, in the form of signs of premature aging and less appealing physical traits. Usually you'll see it occur inside and outside your body simultaneously because, of course, we're holistic beings and each cell in our body reflects the whole body and the whole body reflects the well-being of the infinitesimal cell. So by now you should be able to see where I'm going with this. Your physical imbalances are created because of exposure to incoherence. This incoherence, both energetic and substantive, energetic meaning things like radiation and other non-physical detrimental frequencies, and substantive meaning food, drink, drugs, medicine, etc., play a role in warping your blueprint. Not only that, but it's compiled in your system, so it's had an exponentially problematic effect. But now the good news. By removing the dissonance from your cells and tissues, doing exactly what you're doing with the Rose Cleanse, and what we hope you'll continue to do as a regular part of your life now, you can systematically restore coherence to your energetic blueprint and your physical body simultaneously. This process that you've undertaken powerfully expunges both of these incoherent frequencies, the substantive ones and the energetic ones. This opens the gateway for you to become coherent again, which will restore health and beauty to you. And then the door will also be wide open for you to benefit from the increased reception that you can now access from the living energy network. Okay, you were temporarily cut off from it, but now it's going to be wide open to you. With these two openings in place, you can start to feel what it is to be a human. Remember last week we talked about the difference between the Aborigines calling us the mutants and versus the real people. So we get to become real people again rather than mutants. And you'll be really surprised at the sweetness of that experience. You'll also understand why you've had so many symptoms and struggles and why the people around you do. An incoherent blocked body is synonymous with a being of suffering. There's no way out of this suffering other than to restore coherence. This is why the modern health and medical model fail people all the time. The very substances they use to silence symptoms, namely pharmaceutical medications, surgery, toxic laden vaccines, or hormone manipulation, all introduce greater incoherence to the body, certainly affecting the whole being, not just the body. So they make one symptom go away, but they increase the dissonance in the body, creating a whole other set of problems. And again, I want to underscore this idea of it warping the body's blueprint. When we approach healing of any kind, physical, emotional, even relationship healing, we have to consider how to restore coherence. What caused or is causing the dissonance, the incoherence, and then how do we take dissonance and transform it into coherence, into harmony? That's the very first question any healing catalyst must ask, whether it's a professional practitioner or you're guiding your own healing. It's the question that will ensure that you wind up on the right track rather than making mistakes or taking shots in the dark. That is what healing is. That is what makes one healing catalyst or health practitioner better than another. The one who can succeed at best helping the individual restore his or her coherence has done the best job. But here's the big caveat. No practitioner, no matter how skilled or knowledgeable, can override an individual's own state of being. So if the individual is hooked into dissonant thoughts and behavior patterns, the practitioner's skill and knowledge will be impotent. By the same token, if an individual has a really strong coherence, outside influences cannot disturb it. This is really important to know when we live in a time of gross exposure to radiation, anger, greed, messages that might like to control our minds, and who knows what other offensive frequencies. Even the temptation to give into stress and drama, which are innately dissonant. For a person to be stronger than these frequencies, he or she must live moment to moment in a state of strong coherence, vigilant to maintain it in the face of such competing dissonance. This is one really important reason to practice meditation. Meditation restores coherence. In a world where most people equate beauty and youth with diets, workouts, cosmetic surgery, trendy clothes, craftily applied makeup, the power of coherence-building practices are all but ignored. However, from a coherence equals beauty perspective, meditation, along with deep tissue cleansing, a serene mind, and a loving heart, are the most beautifying, the most energy and longevity-enhancing things we can practice. Coherence is the state to be envied and reached for above all. When you can establish and guard your coherence, you become completely sovereign. This is a state we all need to get to if we are to thrive in the modern world. Otherwise, we'll be doomed to dissonance and all manner of illnesses that can overtake us of the mental variety as well as the physical variety. This work aims to bring you into coherence and then strengthen that coherence as you continue to deepen your roots through greater understanding and application of the knowledge and practices that support it. We start with cleansing the body, and then we persevere with cleansing the body, even though cleansing is not the goal unto itself. It's just that through cleansing, we expunge the incoherence and restore coherence. Okay, we expunge the incoherence and restore the coherence through deep tissue cleansing. Cleansing then becomes our key to opening the door or the cage, or whatever you want to call it, that lies between your state of being today and your free, whole, healthy, sovereign state of being. We gain power, then, when we see through the illusions to truth. When we're still in our cages or behind the doors, seeped in incoherence, we're in a world of illusions, a hall of mirrors. And that's a really powerless place to be. The things that have kidnapped our power, so to speak, are the things that lead us to and keep us in illusionary perception. The illusionary perception perpetuates the dissonance. So the first step to getting our power back is to see that we've been in this hall of mirrors and to do the work that we know will dissolve those warped mirrors and bring us clarity. My favorite modern mystic, Almin, says that the only way to power is through perception. This is what she means. The more we can see through the illusions and become clear, the more power is restored to us. You will literally feel waves of power surge through you as you see through illusion. It will feel ecstatic, and you'll feel like a dark cloud is lifted around you. You won't believe why you couldn't see this clearly before. Part two of it all is obviously to apply the tools and practices that increase our clarity. These actions will in turn increase our ability to see where the error and dissonance continues to come from so we can address it, dissolve it too, and bit by bit take our lives back. We shed the incoherent beliefs and behaviors and then rebuild ourselves with the coherent beliefs and behaviors. And as we do this, we get stronger, wiser, more radiant, our bones strengthen, our symptoms go away, our problems seem to dissolve right before our eyes. For example, let's take a person who watches junk television, eats packaged foods, buys synthetic clothes, and hoards them, feels inadequate about herself or her appearance or her abilities, and engages with people who think along the same lines and subscribe to common activities and dramas that will be vastly out of harmony with a blueprint that they came in with as a baby. They've been warped by these influences. They've attuned to a cacophony, and every cell in their body is suffering from this dissonance. So they may have rheumatoid arthritis, a thyroid condition, cellulite, bags under their yellow-tinged eyes, varicose veins, poor digestion, and thinning hair. Meanwhile, their closet, their kitchen, their desk at work, their relationships all reflect this dissonance. Their closet betrays hoarding and is a mess. Their kitchen is full of random but lifeless items. Their sink and microwave are dirty. Their desk is too intimidating for them to even contemplate organizing. And their friendships are tenuous and superficial, probably competitive. If step by step this individual removed the inner and outer dissonance from her life, her body, her closet, her desk, and her relationships would reflect that, she would go from being trapped in a dissonant energy field, which is like a cage, to slowly but surely having a beautiful life with beautiful relationships. Now, the shedding process would naturally remove most of what she calls her life and spends her time and thoughts on today. You cannot move from dissonance to harmony, from incoherence to coherence, without shedding. The mindless TV, the mental programming that goes with it, would all have to be shed. The superficial competitive friendships, they'd fall by the wayside. She would no longer collude with the same consumption habits, food-wise or clothing-wise, or keep the same foods in her home. She would be drawn to getting rid of all that she'd been hoarding. She would have to change out the incoherence for the harmonious. That is an unavoidable fact, and why many people do not change their lives, but constantly vow to. But if the shedding can be done, she can have a beautiful life, and her physical symptoms will remedy themselves. There's no question about it. When we consider what is for our highest good, we can ask the question, where is there a disorder in our lives, and how can we shed this disorder and replace it with order? What has an incoherent frequency around me, and how could I return that frequency to a harmonious one? This is the only question to ask. Whether it is your body, your mind, your emotions, or your spirituality that's showing signs of disharmony, this is your tool to consistently transform yourself to a more healthier, more beautiful, more powerful states of being. So we question power when we consider what has power over us, and what about that power may be destroying our energy blueprint through its dissonant messages, or directing us to behave and engage with dissonant substances, frequencies, or thoughts. When you pay attention to this, you'll see the power vampires all around you. Great. Once you've identified them, you're well on your way to protecting yourself from them and eventually shedding them. As you do, you'll take that power back from them and strengthen your sovereignty. GMO foods, alcohol, drugs of all kinds, hormones, animal, modern animal and agricultural farming, polluted air and water, immunizations, fluoride, chlorine, radiation from air travel now, especially those airport scanners, and, of course, computer screens and our wireless devices all bring dissonant frequencies into and around our body. Most of what we call conveniences and technological advances are hugely destructive to our resonant frequencies. So if you're suffering from any symptoms or illnesses, you can see very clearly where they've come from. Think of the body as an instrument that is designed for beautiful, harmonious music. Humans are not naturally angry, greedy, depressed, stressed, or aggressive. Restored to coherence, the human instrument is a sweet sound. So as we continue to discuss cleansing and address all your questions, and then as you go forward on your own cleansing and self-empowerment journey, I hope you never forget this key to your power and that it is always available to you for healing and rectifying any problem. So thank you for hanging in with me, because this is a kind of a big lesson, but a really, really critical one. And if we miss this, we pretty much miss everything. So one of the big takeaways I just want to make sure you've glommed onto is that cleansing is not an end unto itself. It's not a goal unto itself. It is a way for us to correct our incoherence and return ourselves to a state of sovereignty. And that is what all of this work is about. Anything that's going to be life-generating, anything that's going to be beautifying, truly beautifying, not just superficially beautifying, is going to bring with it a return to coherence and sovereignty. Okay, so now I'm going to launch into a few questions that have come my way, and after that I'll open it up to the group. And Amanda, how are you doing with your on your line? Have you been able to tune back into us?
Not great, Natalia. I think Anna is going to be able to run with the Q&A today.
Okay. Well, you know, it's not that bad, and I think everyone would like to hear your voice. So, you know, I would say just stay, you know, stay around.
Okay. All right. As long as it's not too bad for you. It sounds really bad to me, but if it doesn't sound too bad for you, then I'll definitely do it.
Yeah, I think rather have you come around, you know, whenever you're able to, whenever you have something to contribute, than not, because I think everyone would like to hear what you have to contribute when you would like to.
All right, great. Thank you.
Okay, all right. So a few questions that have come through. Let's see here. Let's start with, this one about one individual has had pain getting the speculum from the colonic in, and I did some research about this particular speculum, and I can see why. First of all, this individual is using a method for colonics called the Ditolo method. And I never had a Ditolo colonic. They're quite popular in the Midwest, and I believe this individual is seeing someone in Canada. And from what I understand and have heard, you know, and again, I haven't used this method myself, is that the Ditolo method is really fairly offensive to the body. And one of my, you know, my teachers over many years, Gil Jacobs, was adamant never, ever, ever to use the Ditolo method. Now, if I don't try something and I don't know something firsthand, I don't like to give any absolute on it. You know, gosh, you know, we all know how much we hate it when people pass judgment on things like colonics and juicing when they don't know what they're talking about. But, you know, he is extremely knowledgeable about colonics, and I know that he was really very adamant about the Ditolo method. And so I looked into it a little bit more, and I noticed they're also using a plastic speculum. And there are some plastic speculums that are more ergonomically attuned to the rectum. And this one looks very straight and stiff. I wouldn't want it to be used on me. So I really, I would say to start with, try another modality of colonics. You know, one that ideally is, you know, the Woods gravity method, but, you know, if you can't find that, maybe try a Libby method if you can get to something like that, and a different speculum. And if you're using the Woods method, then you're using a stainless steel speculum, so that's going to be much more comfortable anyway and better attuned to the very special curvature of the body in that area. And you want to be delicate there, and you want to use the best utensil possible in that space, obviously. So I think that has a lot to do with it, getting the right speculum and having the right procedure. And if there's still a problem, it could just be that there's a lot of pressure, in which case if it were me, I would probably do a couple of home enemas because the speculum is very, very small. And you would, if there is too much pressure to insert the larger speculum, sorry, we're just going to get very graphic here, by releasing what's sitting in the lower bowel, particularly there on the descending colon, which is what runs down the left side, releasing that will release the pressure, so it will be easier when you get the right colonic to insert the right speculum. So that would be my approach there. I hope that's helpful. Another person had a situation where their eardrum was pulsing and asked if it was recommended to do kind of a wax pulling or something. And, you know, I know a lot of people swear by candling and removing wax from the ears. I've never done it, and it's never felt intuitively right to me. Now, that's not to say that it's not something that is wonderful, and I just don't know enough about it. But I know a doctor sent me to have some wax taken out of my ears, and maybe that's why I'm so dense. And I didn't go because it didn't seem right to me. I thought the wax is obviously there for a reason. I live in a big city, so you know maybe that's why there's a lot of wax, because it's protecting me. But the pulsing, I don't believe is caused by the wax. I believe the pulsing is caused by gas pressure, which is everything in the colon is connected to everything in the head. So whenever there's a head issue, you just go straight to the intestine and the large and small intestine. In fact, there's a great New York Times article about the colon being the little brain. And anyone who wants to research that, I think if you Google it, you'll find it. I haven't seen it for many years, but it's a wonderful article explaining the connection that the colon and the brain have. And basically, if there's a lot of pressure in the intestine, there's a lot of gas pressure, that can manifest in the head, in any area of the head, in gas pressure in the head. So often migraines will be unbelievably relieved to the amazement, seemingly miraculous amazement of people with migraines when the intestine is released. But likewise, I've worked with people who have vertigo and other inner ear imbalances, and it's always coming from that. And once they have some big releases, again, to get graphic, they go away. So I would say to persevere. This work is definitely not going to harm that or make it worse. It will only make it better. Okay, let's see. There's a question about food intolerances, a few questions about food intolerances on the community, foods that are giving people gas and that sort of thing. And the question is, does this get better as we get cleaner, and is it a yeast issue? Well, and the other question is, you know, whether to have some tests taken to determine whether there's a food intolerance. The best way to approach food intolerances and food allergies, because there can be a lot of confusing information you get if you have allergy tests done, which can come up, somebody who's trying to do this work having allergies to avocados, tomatoes, lemons, lettuce, and you know, as a practitioner, I scratch my head and I think, you know, how can that be? Because you know, we know that those are the healing catalysts, so we need them. And what I found is that it's just, again, it's because of this incoherence, there's the information isn't being registered correctly. It's taking information, but it's misunderstanding it, kind of like the body misunderstands the communication systems in the body they misunderstand each other, and we have autoimmune diseases. And scar tissues can develop, and things can just manifest very abnormally, not really understanding how. So, again, it brings us back to these incoherent frequencies. The best way to approach this is to take into consideration the foods that we know are offensive to the human body, and then to just get those out of the picture, because then what you'll be left with are organic raw fruits and vegetables, cooked vegetables, cooked root vegetables, it's a very narrow category of grains like the buckwheat, quinoa, millet, and a few other whole grains. and, you know, some wild fish, the organic goat cheese, that sort of thing. And those foods should not give you any trouble, unless, of course, they're miscombined, and unless, of course, the way the backup is stacking in the body or the release is occurring, there are certain foods that are running into each other, and, you know, we go back to this idea of the human body being like a human petri dish. And so I should say, especially the intestine being like a human petri dish. So sometimes when certain things get awakened and other things are coming down the pike, the way they, the chemical reaction in the petri dish is kind of combustible. You'll have different things combining even though you didn't really intend for them to. It's a temporary situation, and, you know, it's just something that I wouldn't focus too much on, the minutia of little bits of gas here and there or a little bit of bloating one day, if in the big scheme of things you're progressing. Because little things can happen in the petri dish while at large the petri dish is becoming so much calmer when before it was hectic. And a related question is, why is it that after having a poor miscombined meal, the next day there's such a great elimination, such a profuse elimination? And that's very simple, because what happens, and this is something that you can apply yourselves when you feel like you're a little bit stuck, seems like a kind of a perverse thing to do, but when our systems are in states of cleansing and they're over-cleansing, the intestine can paralyze. It can just be like, you know, there's too much that's awakened. I don't know how to release this. I'm just going to freeze. So, but the raw salads and the juices and everything continue to come down, and you're still not moving, so you might get a little bit more bloated, and you're thinking, well, what's going on here? I'm doing everything right. Well, the take-in is all right. Everything you're taking in is so right according to the concept of awakening the waste and magnetizing and hydrating the waste, but the ability for the bowel to keep up with it is the negative. So it's not able to do so, which means it's all starting to paralyze. The second you take in something that's less desirable, that's not alkaline, the bowel can then relax. It's like, phew, all right, well, you know, I can just release all of this now because I'm not in an intense hyper-cleansing mode anymore, and then you have this big release. So it's kind of funny, seems maybe counterintuitive, but it does tend to work for a lot of people a lot of the time when they're in that sort of a situation. Now, in this case, you know, it was an accident. It was just because I think the individual wanted to have some other things or got caught up eating something else and wound up having that result. But, you know, that's something that, you know, we actually advise people to do when they're in a cleansing stalemate, when their system seems a little bit paralyzed. So it's interesting that you discovered it all by yourself. Okay, so let's see. There was a question about regenerating physical structure. I think we got to that, the how deep tissue cleansing can regenerate physical structure. That's what this whole discussion earlier was about, the fact that we are removing the accumulation of incoherent substances, and with them, any incoherent energies, they're connected with them, and in the releasing of them, the body can start to be restored by tuning into and be able to receive that more beautiful, coherent energy field that translates into the physical cells and tissues and bones, et cetera. So it can absolutely happen. Anything theoretically can be regenerated. You know, how far we've been able to go with that is probably just limited to how open we are to being unlimited. You know, whether we can regenerate limbs. I think all of these things are possible, but certainly we can regenerate cells and tissues that are dying off in our body. We know that. That's how our bodies are restructured all the time. So you can look forward to that, absolutely. There were some questions about water. Is only 8 ounces recommended because we get so much more water through tea, juice, and water-containing foods? Should we try to drink more? Exactly. This idea that we need to drink 8 glasses of water a day is, you know, just because the average American eats dehydrated, concentrated food all day. So if you're taking in a diet that's largely water-containing, you can just throw that whole 8 glasses of water a day idea out the window because you're consuming completely differently. In fact, you pretty much throw everything out the window when you do things this way because it doesn't apply to you anymore. You have a whole different set of rules, a different paradigm. So drink when thirsty. It's always good to have some pure water in the day. You know, the body needs pure water, especially if you can get living water and, you know, certainly after a workout or, you know, finding time to have some water in the day is great. You don't need to measure it by ounces. You get to tune into yourself. That's one of the things that you gain from this. In every way, you become your primary authority because you actually can tune into your body. You know what that feels like. You know what the body should feel like. You know what right should feel like. And nobody needs to tell you. The reason we don't drink liquids with meals, somebody asked that, is because we don't want to dilute the digestive enzymes in the stomach when we're eating. We want them to go toward breaking down the food. So it's fine to, you know, sip. You might, you know, find you're out for dinner and you want to have a couple sips of wine. You know, it's small amounts. You're not guzzling anything. You might find that you've eaten something salty and you want to have a little something to drink. But most people feel the need to drink because they're eating concentrated salty foods. So if you're not, if you're having, you know, a big raw crunchy salad and cooked vegetables or sweet potato and avocado and that sort of thing, you're probably not going to feel like you need to drink at the meal, not at all, especially if you've, you know, you've had your juice and you've maybe had an herbal tea or something like that. It's not going to be a necessity. Now, should you have some water close by just in case? My mother used to call it choking water. Yeah, by all means, go ahead. But, you know, we're not drinking water at mealtime or drinking anything. Okay, and somebody asked, should we use bottled water for cooking? You know, every day the nature of what we get through our water supply and air supply deteriorates, and I'm sure new terrible substances are being thrown into it. I don't boil my water when I cook with. I don't use bottled water to cook with. You know, you could if you're cooking and you're literally cooking in it, like you're boiling it, then I wouldn't worry about it. If I'm using it for a recipe that's like a raw recipe that I'm blending, then I will use bottled water. So, you know, if it's going to be kept in its raw state and it needs to be pure, then yes. But if you're using it just to kind of throw into steam some vegetables with, or maybe, you know, I don't even use filtered water to make tea, my herbal tea. I just bring it to a boil, old New York City tap water. Now, that's probably not such a good idea. I don't know. I just, you know, there are enough things that I get anal about that I don't need to be that way with every single thing. But if it's important to you and if you're concerned, you know, then go ahead and do it. And, again, we always keep vigilant because things change all the time. So it could get bad enough that you'll have to. At this stage, you know, I keep my human laboratory has such an incredible antenna on it that I would really feel it if something, you know, were off. So obviously whatever it is isn't bad enough to be registering on my radar in that way. So that's what I do. But definitely, you know, make your own decision on that. Now also based on where you live and what your pipes are like. Another question is it safe to take an Epsom salt bath with unfiltered water? Does this risk absorbing more toxins than we're releasing? Again, I would say no. I'd say go ahead and fill your bathtub up and throw the Epsom salts in, and you're going to feel better, which means that you're releasing more toxins than you're taking in. So I wouldn't worry about that. The most important thing with Epsom salt baths is to use enough. So when they come in the big containers, they have those cartons. They look like milk cartons. I would use about half of that container, or they have them in the smaller sizes too. But use plenty and make sure the water is very hot. It should be just bearable. You should, you know, you couldn't tolerate it any hotter, but it should be hard to get into. And then you should stay in for at least 15 to 20 minutes. So it's not something to get into if you just have 5 minutes. You really need to sit there and sweat it out. And chances are if you've had a really great, successful Epsom salt bath, you're going to want to stay close to the bed because you may just need to lie down right after. It can make you quite woozy, so be prepared for that. Not always, but most of the time it can do that, or will do that.
All right, so if anybody has any questions, go ahead and press 1 on your keypad, and we'll go to the live questions, or you can enter them into the participant dashboard. And we do actually have one from the participant dashboard already, Natalia. The question is, how long after eating dinner would be ideal to wait to have tea or hot chocolate?
Oh, that's a really good question. You know, it's funny because sometimes I think to myself, I want to have some hot chocolate. Everyone talks about the hot chocolate. I haven't had it in so long. And it just, yeah, it's funny because it doesn't feel right to have it after you've had your meal unless you're going to wait a couple of hours. I would say, you know, when you feel like your meal has dropped, when you feel like it's really, you know, it probably will still be in your stomach for the full 3 hours with a properly combined meal, but there can be a sensation of the meal not being up high anymore. I think you all know what I mean. Up high in your stomach, like you just ate it. When that's dropped and you feel relatively empty again, even though your stomach might not have moved the food on, it's that would be about the time. And I would, you know, don't guzzle, don't drink a ton. You know, just maybe sip it. And if you wind up sipping it to the end, you know, that still shouldn't be a problem. But it's just the act of sipping it and nursing it, rather than guzzling it down, that's going to ensure that it's not going to liquefy everything in your stomach. So, I would say, you know, maybe it could, if you ate lightly and well combined, it could be an hour and 15. Could be a little less, could be a little more. But you'll know, too, because if you start to feel like everything's swishing around in there, you'll be like, note to self, I better wait longer next time.
Okay, great, Natalia. I'm going to open it up to Rosa. Rosa, go ahead.
Hi, everybody. My question is, if I wanted to continue in the lifestyle and continue to juice till dinner, it's kind of a four-part question. Will I be getting enough nutrition/calories? And how can I avoid losing more weight? And should I continue weekly colonics?
Okay, I'm sure that's a question that everybody is thinking right now. Let's take it apart and hold me to every aspect of that question. I'll take on bit by bit. The first part is, will you be getting enough nutrients and calories and that sort of thing? Well, remember, we don't look at the body as a calorie nutrient-based kind of system anymore. We think about it in terms of life force, clarity, cleanliness. We determine how strong we are, how fierce we are, how powerful we are based on how we actually feel, not how much food we take in or how many calories it has. So we can take in a lot of calories and feel really lousy, even if they're high quality, quote, high quality calories. Or we could take in very little and feel super energized, have gorgeous muscle tone, have perfect bone strength, and total mental clarity. So what we must remember is that adults don't need very much food. And that's hard to get our heads around because we're told that we need, you know, maybe whatever it is, somewhere between, you know, for an adult female, 16 to 2,200 calories a day. And, you know, and for a male, much more than that. And it's, you know, if we can get away from thinking along those lines, we'll be, you know, in much better, just our choices will be much better, and we'll be thinking along better lines. But basically, to focus on how do I feel. So, I can tell you how you're gonna feel if you continue to juice until dinner and you continue to have weekly colonics. You're going to feel progressively better. You're gonna have, instead of having some great days and some not so great days, you're gonna be having consistently great days. You're gonna be used to feeling wonderful every day, with the very occasional, kind of day, very occasional, and you'll know how to get yourself out of it as well. But, you know, we also bring ourselves down for different reasons. You know, sometimes it just is important to have a low cycle because the body and the mind need to tune out a little bit, and we can wind up creating a low experience in our body just to meet that perceived need. But that aside, you will feel better, and you will not become deficient in anything. I went for a checkup. I just did it for fun. I hadn't seen a doctor in, like, I think 12 years, maybe more. And I thought, oh, you know what, let me just go and see. I think, you know, I wrote a blog about it, and some of you may have read it, just to see, like, you know, what is my blood chemistry? What is it reading? What are, am I deficient in anything? And in every single way, I was far stronger than I was 12 years ago. And I used to be anemic. I wasn't anemic anymore. You know, I used to have, you know, all kinds of issues, symptoms. I told you about in the beginning of the call, but on the first day. But long story short, your body will only strengthen. You don't need that much food as an adult. Really, what we discover when we do this, and when we do, anyone who's done a long-term juice fast finds that really we don't need to eat every day. You know, if it wasn't because I like food so much, if I was strictly trying to connect with the living matrix and feel spiritualized and be have the strongest physical integrity I could have, I wouldn't eat every day. I eat every day because I really like food. And I really enjoy sitting down with my family or my friends and having a delicious salad. I love the flavors. I love the herbs. I love the dressing. I love the whole experience of making it. And, I, you know, it's just one of those things that I don't have no reason to give it up, because I don't think that, you know, we all have this, we don't all have the same goals. Yeah, my goal is not to, to live as an ascetic. It's to, it's to really enjoy my life and stay grounded enough to be able to connect with other people and still enjoy the things I enjoy. Now, that might change tomorrow. I might have different goals. But what I'm getting at is that we don't need to take this idea of taking in food to make sure that we don't deteriorate in that way is misguided. If we're taking in the juices, if we're taking in the raw salads, if our system is staying open so we can receive the nutrients and the life force from the substances, if the intelligent communication of the cells is strong, if the blood chemistry is clean so that the communication there can be strong, if the systems in the body can work the way they're supposed to, and if eating less and removing more waste is going to enable them to do that, then we're going to become consistently better, consistently stronger. So that's the fun part. So if you decide that you want to do that, you're definitely in good company, and you're on a long-term healing track. In fact, I'll also just remind those of you listening to maybe refer to the books on, I forget what it's called now, but there was a lot of research done a few years ago on systematic undereating, like dramatic systematic undereating, and that it's a key to longevity. And they weren't even having vegetable juices. So that's just something to think about. Okay, what was the other part of that question now?
Well, just regarding the vegetable juices, like sometimes I really only crave like one 16-ounce mm-hmm. vegetable juice a day. But mm-hmm. if I'm going to continue in this, should I make it a plan to have at least two?
Mm-hmm. Not necessarily. Do what feels right. Before I was pregnant for several years, I found that I got to the point where I was having to. I thought, you know, it's too much juice. Even though I was waiting until 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening to have it, it felt still like it was too much some days. So I wound up mostly just having one, and I, you know, did that for quite a while. And, you know, of course, being pregnant, everything shifted around. But I felt great just having the one juice a day for a really long time. You know, when you need two, when you need four, when you need one, your body just knows and it'll tell you. We can't be afraid to listen to our bodies when we know our bodies. It's kind of like, you know, if for those of you who have kids, it's like if a teacher or a doctor or some sort of analyst is telling you something about your kid and you're like, I just know they're wrong. I know my child. And your body is like your child, and you know it so well when you connect with it. Now, a mother who doesn't tune into her child isn't going to be able to know, and is always going to have to defer to the authorities. But people who know their kids, people who know their bodies, don't have to do that. They don't have to question themselves. They just know, and they must follow that intuition.
Great.
So don't be afraid of having 16 ounces of juice rather than 32 ounces of juice. You'll be fine. You'll survive.
Okay, good.
You'll
I was wondering about that. And then the weekly colonics is something that you definitely recommend if you continue to juice all week till dinner?
You know, the way you could approach that is you could save them for the times when you feel you have symptoms. So if you don't want to have to, if you don't want to have in your mind like I have to have them once a week, mm-hmm. then think, you know what, I'm gonna just tune into my body and see when I get a little bit low. And okay. when I start to get low, I know that maybe a symptom's going to come on the other side of that. So let me plan my colonics just for a while based on that. Now, you might find that there's a real pattern there. It might be 10 days. It might be a week. You know, but remember that as long as there is copious amounts of waste leaving, that's going to open up your system to be a better conduit of the life force for the systems and all their intelligence to function better. So it's never going to be wrong to release all that waste. And, you know, again, we can't forget how much cellulose is in even one big salad, cooked vegetables, that kind of meal every day. One meal a day can create a ton of cellulose. And you will pass a lot of that because now you're eating mostly mulch, which is, you know, what cows and eat. But it's still going to leave some residue behind because, again, our bowels are still not as strong as they were a couple hundred years ago. So if you're having great eliminations on your own, if you're feeling energetic, if you're taking in good things, you know are leaving your body for the most part, then don't worry about it. You know, a lot of the men I work with maybe go for colonics 4 times a year, and okay. they're fine. You know, that's what they do. But if you can't ignore the signs when they come. And if there's an obvious pattern that you know you need to follow in order to be consistently well every day, then, you know, you don't want to ignore it. If you do, well, then you won't have that great experience.
Okay. Yeah, right now I'm doing one a week, but I almost feel like I could really use 2 a week. But I don't have the time to do it with my baby, so I'm just going to stick with it. But I guess I'll figure it out as I go along.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't hurt to continue. And the earlier you are on in the cleanse, you know, even, you know, when I say early, I mean, you know, early isn't 3 weeks. Early is 3 weeks, but so is a year, you know, when there's so much that will still be leaving. So those more noxious things that haven't left yet, it's good to make sure they leave. So even, you know, to think about it, if you're going to continue to awaken the depths of the waste, you want to make sure it has an exit. And the earlier you are on in removing it, the more of that noxious stuff there is. Once you get beyond that and you're just worried about releasing the mulch and the bits of goat cheese and chocolate residue and fish and organic eggs, and that's the worst thing that's mm-hmm. still offending your system, then, you know, you don't need to worry about it so much. It's still useful to do, and you'll still feel much better because your body will be so used to being in a really high space that without the elimination of that stuff, you're going to feel like more. But in the beginning stages, even, you know, in your case, I know you've been doing it for, you know, a reasonable amount of time already. If you're still releasing a lot, and with those releases, you're feeling distinct elevation, mm-hmm. then, and part of your goal is to see just how far you can go and how good you can feel mm-hmm. and what your human potential really is, then you continue. If that's not your goal, then, you know, and you just wanted to get a little bit leaner and see if this whole thing really works and is all it's cracked up to be, mm-hmm. then do what you want with it.
Yeah, it's a little bit of all of those. And and then the last aspect to the question is that how do I avoid losing more weight? Or does your body just sort of peak out? And because I've lost 10 pounds and that's like it's almost too much for me. I mean, but it's okay. But if I keep going, it's going to be kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, well, a couple things. One, you can always work with that. So if you felt like you didn't like the aesthetic of how lean you were getting, then you could, you know, throw in that extra salad and sweet potato for lunch or something. You know, you can always put the weight on again. You know,
or like add a day or two a week or something.
Yeah, I mean,
having the lunch.
Yeah, you could just be a little more indulgent with things. I mean, it depends. But if that indulgence brings down your life experience, then you start to question. And this happens a lot when I work with men because they love the transformation in their clarity of mind, and they can't believe the way they feel when their center opens up, and they feel alive. But then they want to be big. So, you know, I know we don't want to be big, but there's, you know, you don't want to completely lose your badonky donk either. so anyway, so I think that's the one thing. And the second thing is to remember that the body will contract as long as it's releasing a lot of noxious stuff, but then it will, it's not going to suddenly get heavy or anything, but it's not going to look sick skinny. It's not going to look like like you're anorexic. So you might reach a point where you you hit a very low weight and you look kind of skinny, but that's part of the expunging process.
Okay.
And a sponge is a good term for it because like a sponge, it gets squeezed, it gets really tiny, and then when you release it from being squeezed, it kind of comes back to being a sponge. And a cleansed person will actually weigh a lot less but not look like they weigh so little, which is interesting.
Yeah, you said that, and I thought that that'll be an interesting experiment. See how it all lands out after several months of doing it.
But your body's not going to, you know, get out of alignment. It's only going to get more in alignment. So whatever happens, just know that it's not going to wind up looking ill and skinny. It's, you know, and if that's what people want, then they should look elsewhere. You're not going to...
You're not looking for that.
I know you're not, but, like, you know, a lot of people think I can get as skinny as possible. Well, you know, the idea is, yes, you're going to release a lot of waste and you're going to get a lot leaner, but the goal is not to look like a starving supermodel. The goal is to really glow and your skin to be more like that juicy quality that a young girl has. Not baby fat, not puffy, but just like everything smooth and juicy.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Natalia.
No, it's my pleasure, Reza.
Okay, Natalia. Let's go to Kaheya. Aloha, Kaheya. Kaheya, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me? Hello?
Kaheya, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, I think we have you now. Go for it.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you. This is quite an experience for me. And I'm truly coming to that place in the middle of this cleanse to be asking myself, as a few symptoms are starting to arise, it's bringing up, okay, am I releasing enough toxins? Like, and so there's a variety of different ways that I'm hearing about doing it, and I'm just not sure. And another thing is that I'm not really able or ready maybe to do the colonic, so I've just been doing enemas, and I'm wondering, would that be enough every 3 days, and what else can I be adding to my lifestyle right now to help the toxins be eliminated so I'm not feeling like I'm not doing enough or something.
Okay. All right, let me see.
Well, and Kaheya, you may also want to mention, it's a physical limitation on the colonic side, which you just may, Natalia, just for your understanding too.
Okay. So in terms of the enemas, if they're working for you, then they can be a fantastic tool for a while. The only thing to remember is, so the scenario I would approach this with is, you're going to, you know, assuming that you're juicing till dinner and you're having a largely alkaline dinner, then you're doing a lot of awakening, magnetizing, rehydrating of the old waste. And if indeed your bowels and with the help of the enemas, you're releasing a fair amount of that waste, even if you're not getting all the way through the large intestine to the cecum, you are still going to be opening and dumping this waste out. So that's all very, very positive. And you'll become a better enema taker as you really learn to navigate that all the twists and turns of your large intestine. And we all, you know, at some point, all of our sort of veteran colon cleansers have had our own struggles and triumphs, and you kind of have to learn about it in, you know, in your own time and in your own way, but it does come. But if you're feeling symptomatic, if you're not feeling well, that would indicate that you're not releasing what you're drawing up. So in that case, I would say to scale back. So often when people are just using enemas and not having these, you know, huge waves of releases, they will have symptoms a little bit earlier on, and that's okay if you know how to work around them. So if you start to have symptoms, you know, you don't just keep pushing with the juice until dinner and raw salads. You might, you know, throw in some lunches, or you might juice until dinner and then have a less alkaline dinner, still having the raw salad and everything, but maybe putting in a little bit more of the goat cheese, or having more buckwheat nights, or not abstaining so much from the cooked foods and other things. Not because, you know, we want to gravitate more toward cooked foods and fish and cheese and grains, but because if you're awakening more than you can release, you're just giving your body an exercise in futility. So you're just going to have the pain for no good reason, and your body's going to be trying to release something that it can't release. So be gentle with yourself and just understand why that's going on. And then, you know, hopefully whatever the impediment is to getting the colonics will, at the right time, because these things always do in ways find, there are solutions that come up when we're truly ready for them, and that will appear. I believe that. But in the meantime, just you can try that. And then if you know, I don't like to talk about this on big calls because it's one of those things that can get terribly misinterpreted, but if you can find somebody to teach you how to use hydrogen peroxide appropriately in your enemas, it's really important you know exactly what you're doing. You can help to remove a lot more of the waste and especially collect the carbonic gas that's sitting in the large intestine. And what everyone needs to understand is going on inside their intestines is usually a gas waste Big Mac. So you've got, you know, waste behind that gas, behind that more waste, behind that more gas, and so on and so on and so on. So if you're having releases of waste with the enemas, and then you're finding that you can't really get past that because there's a little bit of a block, it's usually because there's carbonic gas that isn't leaving well. And what the hydrogen peroxide will do, again, if it's used very, very carefully in the right amounts, the right percentage, all these things, I'm not going to go into it here because I don't want anybody misinterpreting anything. Don't do this at home unless you know exactly what you're doing. That hydrogen peroxide has a way of magnetizing the gas out, so you can pull that gas out, which is amazing, and is very empowering. And then you can reconstitute the waste behind that gas pocket, and suddenly you're going to make some serious headway. And when you start to be able to do that and learn how to manipulate your enema that way, you can definitely get to the cecum. And those of us who've gotten good at this have all learned how to have a full cecum release with an enema bag. You'll wind up, as you know, most of you know, when you start with an enema, you start on your left side, and you dump the left side. By laying on your left side, releasing your left side. And most people think you can only get to what's on the left side with an enema. But once you clear the left side and you get good at releasing the gas pressure, then you can get around the transverse colon and both of the flexures on either side of that, which are, you know, like little turning points that are, you know, otherwise kind of hard to get around, then you wind up lying on your back to get the rest. So getting the transverse and the right side of the ascending colon is done on your right side. It's done on your back. We never turn on our right side. It's done on your back, and lying on your back gives the water the chance to get around the transverse colon and eventually down the ascending colon in order to reconstitute the waste that's there and that then can release the cecum. So if you can get all of that, and, you know, again, anyone who needs to take their enema kit with them long-term should get good at this because it's really liberating, and you can also, I mean, I've bought hydrogen peroxide in all over the world in all kinds of different little pharmacies. You got to be careful because the percentages are measured differently, and they go by volume and different things than our peroxide in America uses. But once you get good at it and you educate yourself, it's very liberating, and you can take an enema kit anywhere in the world, of course. So I think that's a question that's, you know, I wanted to address for you, but also for everybody else. And then you can also, it sounds like you may be in Hawaii, is that right?
What's that?
It sounds like you're in Hawaii, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you have the benefit of using the elements of the great Pacific Ocean, which is an incredible healer, and the life force of the sun. So you can be expunging, you know, incoherent vibrations and waste through your skin, through the air you breathe. You're definitely in the right place. You're swimming, so to speak, in all that beautiful alkalinity. So I think
yeah. I heard about the Epsom salt bath. Like, if I do the enemas with Epsom salt bath, and then, like, could there be some herbal teas that can help me on top of it, and then that be enough? Because what I'm finding is that I guess I am detoxing quite a bit, because when I go to 5 o'clock for my dinner, it almost like I don't really want it, but I want it, but I kind of don't, and I'm just feeling like I have to, because I don't want to over detox. You know, I feel disciplined with the program, but I'm not sure that I'm releasing enough toxins. So I'm just curious about the different ways, and can I do an array of those and feel like I'm getting them out enough?
Well, you can always do an array, and we can talk a little bit more about the things you can incorporate, but the one thing that's going to really remove everything is the enemas. So the question I would ask you is, are your enemas working for you? Are you releasing actual matter, not just water?
Oh, yeah, I'm releasing matter for sure, but I'm doing them every 3 days, and it makes me feel nauseous and I'm releasing for sure, but I don't know. I'm not really able to hold it very long,
mm-hmm.
and maybe taking in a bag and a half in one sitting and feeling like that is enough of that.
Okay. Well, first of all, the way I like to do it and recommend people do it is when they're on their left side, starting out their colonic or their enema, to just take in what feels good, but isn't pushing too hard. So take in the water that feels right, and that might be a quarter of a bag in the beginning, because that first part is the end part. That's, you know, where the waste is ready to go. So the time to take a lot of water is not at the beginning of the enema. It's going to be way later at the end. So you might have a few holds and releases before you start to take in quantities of water, you see? So say you take in like half of the enema bag, and that feels like you can hold it without any problem. Well, hold it and retain it. Let it sit for a little bit. And it can sit while the speculum is still inside you, because you've just had to clamp the water tube. And if it feels like it's reconstituting, but you don't have the urge to evacuate, then you release the water tube again and take more water in, and then allow that to sit for a second. So that can all be sitting and kind of percolating, and just like, you know, like it's all being reconstituted. When the waste is reconstituted, the peristalsis kicks in, and you know, and then there's no question. You've got to get up and go. And that's the beauty of eating. The cleaner your bowel becomes and the more water-containing your food becomes, your peristaltic activity, that muscle in your colon, is going to get stronger, because whenever it's hydrated, it's going to move. Hydrated waste moves. So this matter that's sitting that needs to be reconstituted needs to sit and get reconstituted, and then it's going to move. And then when you release that, and you start to really dump the left side, then you're able to take in a full 2-quart enema bag. And, you know, usually at that point, it feels good and effortless to take in the 2 quarts. And at that point, you will either stay on your left side, or you might even just tilt a little bit onto your back, because it might be going around the left flexure. So you might be able to carry a little bit into the transverse, which is just going to reconstitute more there. And then when that's reconstituted, again, the peristalsis will be like, okay, this is ready to go. And you're going to sit. You're going to always put your feet up a little bit, you know, on, I just use a waistband, but whatever you have in your bathroom to elevate your feet about 18 inches. And you'll release that. And then you can, then you'll find you can easily take in a bag again. Now, I wouldn't take in necessarily a bag and a half, you know, unless you feel like you really want to. I mean, they have actually 4-quart bags, and they used to use them in the Army. So they, you know, it can be done. It should, you know, in the Army hospitals, it, you know, back in the day, enemas were used all the time to cure all sorts of ailments, especially in Europe, always in the Middle East. I mean, this stuff is just so common there, and we just got out of touch with it here in America. But basically, you should be able to, don't force the water in the beginning because you'll be able to retain it later. You just need to get what's gettable at first, and always be gentle. There can be times when you still feel a little bit nauseous with enemas. And that's usually because there's gas pressure that is stuck. And when it leaves, you immediately feel better. But if it doesn't leave, it can leave you feeling kind of wonky for the rest of the day. And that's sort of the gamble that's taken. But, you know, hopefully you'd be able to put that to practice and it'll get better.
Yeah, that sounds great. So, okay, I can keep working on that. I'm not meaning that I'm taking in a bag and a half. I'm taking it in the stages that you're saying, but at the end of a completion, I come into those three phases where I've done about a bag and a half or so.
Mm-hmm. But, well, and that's not really, it's not really enough. When we talk about doing, you know, an efficient, or I should say a complete enema, we're talking about, you know, a 45-minute enema that might be 3 to 4 bags. So it explains, you know, that it's great that you're moving matter out, but there's still a lot more you can get just with your little home enema.
Okay. And then, so what about the, like, a toxic liver, like it's dumping into my liver, but we're not doing, like, liver flushes and things like that?
We don't have to because we're cleansing the organism. So the liver is basically, if you think about any organ, that's whose job it is to be a filter for something. So the kidneys are filtering the liquids and the acids. The liver is filtering the fats and cooked proteins, and the pancreas is filtering the starches and sugars. When we take in too much and the body starts to hold on to all this waste, it's overwhelming those filter organs. And so when we release, we start to release all the compilation of this waste, then those organs are relieved as well, and they start throwing off their waste matter, and they start to regenerate in the same way that everything else in the body does. So we don't have to undertake a specific organ cleanse. We can just do an organism cleanse.
I see. Okay.
And if you've been exposed to drugs, alcohol, lots of cooked fats, lots of cooked proteins, and you know that your liver is overwhelmed, then you just tailor your cleanse to focus more on vegetables, roots, winter squashes, and even if you need to use some of the, you know, the high-quality grains now and then, rather than focusing on, you know, the fish, the cheeses, and those things. So you just tailor it based on that. But for most people, if they have a liver issue, it's, you know, unless they were doing a lot of hard drugs and alcohol or took a lot of pharmaceuticals or something along those lines, they usually really need a full organ cleanse because their pancreas is tired, their kidneys are tired, their heart is tired, everything's been, you know, been through it. So doing the full organ cleanse, organism cleanse, is really the way to go for most people anyway.
Okay, so that's not an area that you have to worry. Like, I haven't done all those things, so that's not something to really worry about, like my toxins.
Not at all. No.
Okay.
It gets you really myopically focused, takes your eye off the ball, the really big picture, which is what we're doing. So absolutely sticking with awaken and release. That will get you everywhere you want to go.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, let's go to Sandra. Sandra, go ahead.
Hi.
Hi, Sandra.
Hi. Hello, everyone. My question was just answered tremendously. Thank you, Natalia. I do have one. Are you there?
I'm here, yeah. Great.
Okay, great. Okay, with a 45-minute enema, so I should be going through, say, 3 to 4 bags.
If you
did I hear that right?
Yes. I mean, if you feel like you've had a great evacuation with two bags and you know that everything's feeling great, your head is clear, and you had a great release, and based on where things are and how water-containing your food has been, that you know you've really gotten the goods, then move on with your day. But
yeah.
if you haven't gotten there yet, don't be afraid to continue, because that you obviously haven't gotten the gold, and you know, if you go on with your day at that point, you're going to go on with your day without getting the gold. You're not going to feel so good. You might actually feel a little bit worse because you've taken in this water that's sitting there and it's not really, you know, hasn't done its job yet, and now you've got the waste and the water, and maybe you're starting to bloat because it's been reconstituted, but it hasn't really been enough and it's not moving out. So, you know, you just don't want to be caught in that situation. And I remember when I was first getting into this, I was a little bit nervous of doing more than, say, two bags. And just knowing that it was not only safe, but often, you know, just the way to complete an enema, it was liberating. And I felt like, okay, wow, I can do this now. Now I could really accomplish the full enema, and I wasn't afraid to do so. And my body thanked me for it.
Okay, thanks. You know, this cleanse has just been spectacular for myself, and I feel like I don't really need to do this once a week, the enema, the colonic. Colonics are great. So I think I'm going to give myself a rest this week with the colonic and then do maybe an enema and a colonic next week. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing great results without them. Mm-hmm. Is that possible?
It can happen a lot with beginners because first of all, you're not used to feeling open and clear. So the amount of clarity you gain immediately from just pulling out what the newness that's sitting there in your center is so overwhelmingly wonderful that you're like, you know, that's enough. It feels like, okay, that's enough good feeling. I feel good enough now. Thank you very much. And then, you know, and that's fine, and ride that. You know that they're there. You know the colonics and enemas are there. And
okay.
If you start to, you know, hit symptoms or you don't feel as well as you feel today, then, you know, then you pull them out of your toolbox. But, you know, if you don't feel they're important to you right now, I mean, when I first got into this, I was doing a colonic a month, and my body was radically changing. You know, I think because I was so young and because there was just so much that was ready to go, I was taking leaps without that. But, you know, it really just varies person to person, which decade you're in, how much has, you know, gone in, what kind of substance was it, if it was pharmaceutical versus whether it was, you know, just, say, you know, too much popcorn or something. It just really depends. Every individual body has a different inherited energy. So you might just have a really good, strong bowel, and your body might be actively pushing the poisons out without a lot of resistance. And that's wonderful. So you tune into that, and you know that you can approach your cleanse differently to the way, you know, say, you know, Sally or whomever, you know, approaches her cleanse, because she's coming in with different lineage and different accumulation issues.
Okay, well, great. Thank you. That clears a lot up. Thank you so much.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Hey, Natalia. So I have a quick one from the dashboard. Is a little organic cream okay in the diet?
Yeah, I've never seen organic cream be a problem. I mean, don't put it with fruit, obviously. But, yeah, otherwise, it's definitely, I mean, we're talking about a drizzle of organic cream or using it a little bit and just to elevate a cup of coffee or a dish or something. Yeah, I wouldn't let that stand in your way.
Okay, and then let's see. I think I'll go to Anna. Anna, go ahead. Thanks for waiting so patiently.
No, thank you for calling on me. This has been a really big roller coaster ride. Even though I've been cleansing for a long time, this has been a great spiritual awakening, and I've been awakening and releasing a lot and having to do a lot of colonics and enemas in between and still getting detox symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And my boyfriend is also cleansing, and I kind of want to get your, your input on cleansing as a couple, because it doesn't sometimes it feels right, and sometimes I think about how in ancient times people used to go off on their own and fast and have to do that and then come back, because there are some nights when we can meditate together and really come together and enjoy a meal, and there are other days when our detox symptoms are clashing, and I'm so sensitive to his energy that I can pick up the things that he's experiencing right after I've cleansed, for example, like had an enema.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry if that's not a clear question, but I just want to get a little bit of your input on being in a relationship and cleansing together, detoxing.
I'll do my best. First of all, it's, you know, as you get clearer, as you get more coherent, you and one who gets into the space will naturally be able to pick up so much more on any incoherence. So your antenna is getting so finely attuned that you can't help but feel what's going on all around you. Now, the challenge is to be very aware of what's going on all around you, and this can be in relationship with one other person, or it can be in relationship with a whole group, or a city, or, you know, or whatever it is. How can you, then this is going to be, this is probably part of your, you know, spiritual mission right now for yourself and your growth, is how do you hold your center and that coherence in the midst of the things that will be wonky around you? And when you can do that, you get to take another leap. So I would look at it as an opportunity to, you know, some people are on a very fast spiritual growth track. And, it's like you said, it's a roller coaster. It's like, you know, it's speedy. And for whatever reason, your soul contract or, you know, whatever it is that you want to call it, you're supposed to be moving at a fast speed at this point, at least, because it's trying to get you somewhere as part of your life path. So if this is happening to you, rather than pushing it away and denying it, because we never want to oppose nature, and this is part of your spiritual nature, this is where you're now, you want to see what is the opportunity, what is the gift. And the gift is that he's giving you an opportunity to practice, just like we have any practice, to practice holding your flame, holding your center, holding your coherence in the midst of that, that whatever it is that he's feeling, or that the city's feeling, or that, you know, your friends are feeling, because he's just going to be one example or one opportunity, but you're going to be interfacing with probably a lot more of this, and maybe it's part of your life path to learn how to teach others to do that. Or to be in a situation where you're a healing catalyst for a lot of people who are out of their coherence, and you're going to have to be able to, and all of us are going to have to be able to do this at some point, because we're not going to be able to survive in our crazy world and remain humans if we can't hold our center while, you know, but that's a great poem, when all the world is losing theirs. I can't remember, I think it's Alfred Lee Tennyson or something. If you can keep your head when all the world is losing theirs. You know, and for us, keeping our head is something much more profound. It's like having that pure channel running right through us from the root system to the higher energies, and staying in a perfectly attuned vibration. So it's a great opportunity, I think, for you in this case. And instead of, you know, it'd be easy to maybe resent him for it, or resent the fact that he's wanting to piggyback on your process. In this case, I would say you're being given a chance to practice leadership and really get comfortable and confident holding your center in the midst of cacophony.
Yeah, and I think you're completely right. That is exactly where I'm kind of lacking right now. So this is really helpful. Thank you.
Okay, have fun on that roller coaster.
I am.
Okay, Natalia, we have 2 minutes left. Do you want to take one more question?
Sure.
Okay. And for those of you who entered questions on the dashboard, some of them are perfect for the forum, So go ahead and put them on the forum, and then if they don't get answered this week, then we'll definitely address them next week. But I think a lot of them are great for the forum. So Sharon, go ahead. Sharon, are you
there? I'm here. Hi, Natalia. You really helped me in the last session that we had. I'm the one with the a lot of weight loss I've had in the last year with doing your program, and then I had this bladder thing. I don't know if you remember, but we talked about it back then. Well, I ended up going to the doctor, and she did tests and everything and said that it wasn't an infection and to just get my body alkaline. So I was doing the I was actually trying to do the paper tests, you know, with the urine in the morning at night, and I found that I pretty much got my body to be more alkaline. And now I'm finding that the bladder is pretty much subsiding, but the one time that I notice now, it's like my body is so in tune to doing this and it's driving me crazy. It flares its head up whenever I have, it's not what I'm eating, it's whenever I have any emotional distress. Then that night, it's like, oh, I feel like I'm like right back to square one, but then I go to bed and I sleep. And the next morning, I'm all fine again. So I'm just wondering if you have any more suggestions on this thing for me.
Oh gosh, in terms of the like how to deal with the emotional side of it and prevent that from creating the physical problem.
Right. I know you had I think a couple of weeks ago or maybe a week ago or so you had talked about Rolfing. And I thought, I wonder if that's something that I should try. And so I thought, well, I'll see what you think. Or do I just need to stick with what I'm doing? Because I noticed that with being diligent with my cleansing, it seems to, you know, and diligent with my eating. I shouldn't say so much with the cleansing, but diligent really with the eating part. It seems to be subsiding more and more and more away, but it's still there. And I'm like, all right, I just want to be done with this thing.
Okay. Well, I think I have an idea where we can start, and maybe we can continue on this too later. But you know, every organ has a corresponding emotional connection. So you know, for example, the liver is the seat of anger, and let's see if I can see what else would be. The heart is the seat of sadness. And most importantly for you, the bladder kidney meridian is the seat of fear. So the natural connection I would draw, just the obvious one that comes to me that you could practice and work with for a little while, is it possible that these emotional reactions you're having that sound like they're coming from the outside, so people are affecting you in a certain way or circumstances are affecting you in a certain way that you wind up internalizing them emotionally, and somehow they're connecting with you on a subconscious or unconscious level with old fears, buried old fears that you might not be consciously connecting the two, but your body is, and the body never lies. So okay. What could that be? And maybe this is time for you to go on a little expedition and do some of, you know, what we call recapitulation exercises to go back into our past and think about what were fearsome things that may have happened to you very early in your life, and maybe you won't even equate those things with fear. So if you think you found the answer, I would still keep digging and see if any of the emotions resonate. So when these things affect you, how where would you feel a similarity in how something affected you back then? You know, that feeling is probably familiar. So see if you can figure out what that is. It'll probably give you a good key. at the very least, a good clue.
Okay.
So, give it a try and just sit with it. It's not an easy place to go into because it kind of, recapitulation is dredging up a bit. But we only dredge up, not to keep looking at the same stuff over and over, because that would be useless. We dredge up to see what's going on. What have we held on to? Because the same thing that's stored in our in the connective tissue that the Rolfing would work on, but from a different angle. And it also forces you to take ownership of the subconscious, unconscious, buried memories and emotions and try and draw those connections yourself. And it's a very useful thing to do rather than putting it in somebody else's hands. It's still helpful to have somebody else help you. But this is something I think you can accomplish a lot on your own. I think maybe it will become abundantly obvious and give you a huge surge of power when you figure out what the connections are. Because otherwise there's no good reason for the outside world to be controlling you. There's something internal that's allowing it to.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And especially when you were talking in the beginning of your talk about how you can, it starts with the cleansing and then it seems to just delve deeper and further in, and I guess it's where you're going to take it is what matters.
Exactly. This is interesting. I think it's a very interesting puzzle. It's going to be, I think, a rewarding journey for you to go in and figure out the connection. And I definitely think there's something there connecting your kidneys and bladder, which is, I don't think it's any coincidence that the connection to fear is there and that you're having this emotional reaction and that it's manifesting in that place physically.
Mm-hmm. Does the reproductive area have anything to do with that, do you think?
Well, it would depend on what's going on reproductively. I would say if it were like an infertility issue or something, there could definitely be a connection because there's so many connections there. But most importantly, if you're acidic, and it means you're blocked, which means that there's pressure on your reproductive organs. So physiologically, I could definitely see a connection. And emotionally, there are plenty of connections that you could draw to the reproductive organs. Yeah, that would be a whole discussion.
A whole other gamut of things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely worth exploring.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks ever so much, and God bless.
I hope it helps. Likewise.
It did, very much. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. That will be the official end of the call. We'll have the audio available within about 24 hours. And we look forward to speaking with you all on Thursday. Great job, everyone, and thank you, Natalia.
No, it's a pleasure. Well done, everyone.
This audio and the Guided Rose Cleanse is a source of information only. The information contained in this audio and in all Guided Rose Cleanse materials should by no means be considered a substitute for the advice of a qualified medical professional, who should always be consulted before beginning any new diet or other health program. Detox the World disclaims any liability for any adverse effects arising from the use or application of the information contained herein.